Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 16, 2014. The South Sudan peace talks are delayed once again in Ethiopia.
If the politicians could agree, then it would follow that their followers will also stop the fighting. This has not happened so far, so even though the ceasefire was signed, you know, there was no agreement on the political issue.
And World Food Program staff is arrested in South Sudan.
We are trying to track where they have taken him, but still we don't know. And it was unfortunate because he was taken while the UN peacekeepers were there, the Rwandans, and since they were not able to protect the national staff from being taken.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The on, again, off peace talks between the two warring parties in South Sudan have been postponed once again as humanitarian crisis in the country continues to deepen. VOA's Gabe Joslo reports frustration is growing as rival sides make little progress on a deal and the threat of further violence looms large.
Negotiations that were set to resume Thursday between the South Sudanese government and rebel factions have been postponed until at least October 20th. In the latest delay to the slow-moving talks. The biggest obstacle at the moment is failure to agree on the shape of a planned transitional government and the distribution of power therein. Past agreements, including three separate ceasefire deals, have failed to take hold. Violence that began in December last year has displaced more than 1 million people in the country. Without peace, many are too afraid to return. Niall Tietmamer, policy analyst at the Sud Institute in South Sudan, says the country is starting to lose its patience.
People are already suffering in the displaced camps, and also people are also suffering in the refugee camps. So people want to go back home. That's why people are getting frustrated.
At the heart of the conflict is a political dispute between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. The split has divided factions of the military and led to inter-ethnic fighting that has killed at least 10,000 people. While the country has been relatively calm since the rainy season began around May, security and humanitarian officials warn fighting could resume in the coming dry season, putting more pressure on already vulnerable populations caught in the crossfire. Aid agencies warned last week more than 1 million people could be pushed into extreme hunger by early next year if the situation does not improve. In order for there to be peace, Tietmamer says the warring sides have to first work through their political differences.
If the politicians could agree, then it would follow that their followers will also stop the fighting. This has not happened so far, so even though the ceasefire was signed, you know, there was no agreement on the political issues.
The international community has also been increasing pressure on political leaders. The United States has already imposed sanctions against South Sudanese officials accused of fueling the crisis and is considering further restrictions. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The chairman of the United Nations National Staff Association says he is worried about an incident where a South Sudanese working for the World Food Program was arrested today by people believed to be security operatives. Bennett Kenyi says Mark Dieng was picked from Malakal Airport by soldiers in uniform when he was boarding a WFP flight heading to Juba. He says his association is asking the government to protect national staff members working with aid agencies in conflict areas.
The staff member is a failed security officer. He was boarding the plane. He was supposed to board the only flight coming down to Juba. And while on the queue, some people in uniform came. Allegedly, some say they are pro-government militia, which belongs to the Shuluk ethnic group. And the other person, people say they are national intelligence security agents. They just grabbed him from the line, put him in a car and drove away. This was what has happened.
And do you know where they took him to?
We are trying to track where they have taken him, but still we don't know. And it was unfortunate because he was taken while the UN peacekeepers were there, the Rwandans, and since they were not able to protect the national staff from being taken. And we are told that they are pursuing where he has been taken, but until this moment, we are not informed of where he is, and we are concerned about his face.
And what is the name of this World Food Programme staff who was picked today?
He's called Mark Diang.
And has he been working in Malakal for quite a long time?
Yeah, he's been working in Malakal quite a long time. And he's a national staff who has a long experience in the field of security within the UN system. He worked in Bentiu and also he worked in Malakal for quite a long time.
And Bennett, is this the first time that the UN is facing this kind of problems with its national staff in South Sudan?
There were serious occasions that happened to national staff. Initially, some months ago, even in Juba, our staff were removed from boarding planes in order to fly to Entebbe to undergo CAPAS training, just because they were from the Nuer ethnic group. This is one. Two months ago, also, we had staff from Wao, they were picked. One is in Nuer, one is from the Balanda tribe. They were arrested in Wao and they are brought in Juba. At the moment, they are under the custody of NIS. Until today, they are not charged, they are not taken for trial, I mean. So, to us, we are much concerned about this environment, which is a violation of the status of force agreement, which is signed between the United Nations and the government of the Republic of South Sudan.
And have you ever made any formal complaint to the government of South Sudan regarding what your national staff or what some of your national staff are going through?
There are procedural issues. When our two national staff were picked for out, we complained through our chief of staff and we were able to launch a complaint to the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And up to date, we have not had an update about the status of these two staff. And what happened today in the morning, I've written to Toby Lanza, who is the deputy SRG and head of the humanitarian wing in the Republic of South Sudan, raising complaint about our WFP staff who has been kidnapped at the airport.
Upper Nile State Minister of Information confirmed the arrest but declined to mention the identity of the people who arrested the WFP staff member. Peter Othquart says his government is investigating the incident.
Yes, the incident was reported to us and we all rushed there to where the incident took place. The acting governor was there as well as the Secretary Major General Johnson Goin was there. So the investigation is still on. Up to now, I have not yet received any result.
And why was this particular employee of the UN picked?
This is why I'm telling you that the investigation is taking place, and we will let you know after all we complete the investigation.
The chairperson of the National Staff Association, the UN National Staff Association in Juba, was saying they even don't know who picked their staff. Do you know who picked this UN staff?
We are not sure about it. The government is not sure about it. If there are any some kind of element who operate in their own interest, the government will take a major issue on that.
So you're telling me the government does not know the identity of those who picked him?
The government was not aware because this will be some individuals who operate by their own motives.
And who are these individuals? I mean, there's a government in Malakal. There's a state government.
The government and the UNHCR, UN agency, as well as ANMIS are working hand in hand to make sure this situation is contained.
That's Peter Hotquatch, Upper Nile State Minister of Information. He was speaking to me from Malakal this past hour. South Sudan is marking a global hand-washing day today. Officials in Juba are hoping that by holding events in schools, they can increase awareness of how the simple act of hand-washing can boost health. Waki Simon Wudu sent us this report from Juba.
School children at Juba Day 1 Primary School are using clean water and soap to scrub their hands clean. They are taking part in an event to mark Global Hand Washing Day, which the government and its partners hope will help get the message across that washing hands can create a strong defense against diseases, including deadly ones. And it's important to get that message across in South Sudan. Many South Sudanese still do things like eat without washing their hands or do not wash them after going to the toilet. South Sudanese Acting Minister of Electricity, Dams and Water Irrigation, Catherine Juan, who was guest of honor at the event at the school, says South Sudanese need
to take individual and collective responsibility required to play a role by practicing correct and consistent hand washing with clean water and soap at all critical times.
Juan says hand washing can reduce diarrheal diseases and acute respiratory infections, which account for 40% of child deaths in South Sudan. There are five key times that people should wash their hands, she says.
Before eating, before preparing food, before feeding or breastfeeding a baby, after using the latrine, and after changing a baby's diaper.
She says the government has policies in place to promote hygiene. It's up to places like schools to spread the message about the healthy benefits of hand washing. Effie Huggins is the UNICEF deputy country representative in South Sudan. She says hand washing is one of the simplest tools to fight diseases.
Many of the children who get sick inside Sudan with coughs or diarrhea, they could cut that number by a quarter if they wash their hands. So think about that, 25% less infections, less disease just by hand washing.
Huggins says children should be taught from an early age just how important hand washing is. The World Health Organization, or WHO, says many of the more than 340,000 children under the age of 5, or almost 1,000 a day, who died last year from diarrheal diseases would still be alive today if they had access to clean water and sanitation and knew how to wash their hands properly.
Washing of hands is very important. Brothers and sisters, wash your hands.
For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo from Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan student leaders in Uganda deny they stole money from student union funds. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think there is a need for laws to protect internet privacy?
Obviously, because everybody has a right to privacy, and so if there's a law to protect internet privacy, I think it's right.
The young guys who are now coming, they need quick money, so they always go to the net and start duping people. Someone has worked for so many years and duped that person to get the money, and I think that is not right.
Yes, I believe there should be laws to protect internet privacy. I don't want anything that I do to be out there for everyone to see what I'm doing.
Yes, I think so, because certain things that we have in the internet are private, but there are certain things that are not. So those that are private, I think it would be important to have laws that govern those things, because we cannot avoid the internet. We need the internet in this day and age. We need it, but we need some of our things to be private.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The head of South Sudan's student union denies his team stole money from a sizable donation made by President Salva Kiir's office. For VOA News, Bonifacio Taban has that report from Kampala.
A student union chairman, Maureen McKeir-Fatt, has accused committee members who traveled to the capital, Juba, to lobby for the funds of committing fraud. The funds were a donation to the student union from President Kiir's office. It is alleged that the union finance minister, Victoria Nyandur, IT Information Secretary Ben John Nyunfiu, and General Secretary Angok Fitter Grang embezzled the funds. The Union Finance Minister Nyandur, who is based in Kampala, has dismissed allegations as being without basis. Nyandur said he strictly followed the rule when instructing FAT on how to make a formal request.
You will write your letter, you stamp it and give it to the president of union, not me as a finance minister, because I don't have right to give you 150,000. But if you ask me over the phone to give you $1,500, it does not make sense.
Lual Jiel, a vice president for the Kampala-based student unions. Lual said his office has received all of their funds. donation by President Kiir offers that were intended for use by the student unions.
Those people who went to Juba were the finance minister, the secretary general, and the information minister. They came with $150,000 in cash. That money was handed over to the leadership of the union. There is nothing like 125.
Student union finance minister Nyandu repeatedly stated that the allegations against her are baseless and that the accuser are simply making noise to create a diversion.
I can't fear anything because I never took anything. It is because I know that that person have a personal problem with me, because he called me over the phone when I was giving out the money that he want me to give him some money. I told him, my friend, you need to wait. So we need to give them those students. We are really suffering.
Dengai Galua, a deputy legal affairs advisor for the South Sudanese Student Union in Uganda, the allegation will be handed over to the union audit chamber before a finding of guilt can be labeled at any of the accused.
This allegation will be given to the audit chamber commission to audit whether the allegations are true or false. So to me, as the deputy minister for legal affairs for South Sudanese Student Union in Uganda, I believe in a general principle of law that says every person is presumed innocent until proved guilty.
Student Union Chairman Fat claimed that the Fason Group alleged to have embezzled $25,000 used it to bribe and identify officials in the office of the President Kiir in order to get the fund released. However, Fat said President Kiir had already publicly announced the fund would be donated to the Student Union in Kampala and that the bribery allegation don't stand up. According to Fat, the Student Union is comprised of 32 universities attend by South Sudanese students. Those students must pay 5,000 Ugandan shilling in subscription fees to join the union. However, Fat said the amount of funds received from members' contribution are not being publicly revealed or properly accounted for, and that it remains unclear what amount is being spent on providing student service. It is also not clear how many students we are benefiting or exactly how the funds are utilized. Pat said his office would continue to draw attention to the mismanagement of student union fund despite the objection of union executive. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban reporting from Kampala.
From Kampala, we move to Jonglei State. Hundreds of teachers in Jonglei State have threatened to shut down their schools after not being paid additional allowances for several months. The teachers say their salaries are not enough to feed their families. Education officials say they simply don't have the money to pay their allowances. For VOA News, Philip Thornaleu reports from Bor.
Teachers first threatened to shut down schools and stage visible demonstrations last month, but they put those plans on hold after a Sunday church service in which Deputy Governor Baba Medan announced the government would pay the allowances. Teachers say the government has not honored that pledge. So this week, they renewed their threat to close schools if they did not get paid. On Monday, Caretaker Governor John Kung Nguan shared an emergency meeting on the issue and convened teachers to give the government more time to come up with the allowance money used to help cover the cost of housing and transportation. But teachers warn they won't wait forever. Primary school teachers' monthly salaries range from about 280 to 350 South Sudanese pounds. Secondary school teachers hand from 800 to 900 South Sudanese pounds per month. Teachers say the salaries alone are not enough to put food on the table. Before the government introduced austerity measures in 2012, due to the oil shutdown, each teacher received a monthly teaching allowances, commonly referred to as chalk allowances, equivalent to a quarter of their monthly salary. The allowances ended with the oil shutdown. In July of last year, the government announced it was lifting the moratorium on allowances, but teachers say they were never reinstated. Abraham Duot is a primary school teacher in Bor.
I earn only 350 South Sudanese pound, and this amount cannot even be equivalent to the expenses which I could buy from the market, because prices are changing from now and then. If you could divide this money, transportation services, food allowances, and medication allowances, I think they will not be equivalent.
Jonglei State's Education Minister, Tut Kon Nyang, says the government understands the fleece of teachers, but simply does not have the money to pay the allowances.
We are sympathized with them at the government that, yeah, that is challenging what they are getting for the to meet their needs is very difficult. But the problem at the state now in the crisis, there is no any income, there is no tax collection.
Teacher Duarte says he realized that shutting down schools would not improve teachers' living condition, but he insists the government must pay the allowances.
When you go to the market, the price of one bag of flour here in Bo Town is 240. The price for oil, these big 20 liters of oil, is 150. So the money for the teacher, especially for a grade 12 teacher, can even get finished in these two items. So it is really very difficult.
Nyang says the state government is doing everything it can to ensure that teachers get their housing allowances. He says the state executive will ask the state parliament to approve as yet unspecified amount of money to pay teachers and civil servants allowances that should have been reinstated when austerity measures were lifted last year.
The government of state, they are working so hard to pay 50% for the house allowances to the teacher and to the all civil servant. The reality is that there is low payment for the teachers. Is a real and all a national issue.
Education Ministry says a school in government-controlled parts of Jonglei State, including Bor, Pibor, Tuch East, Duke and Pochala counties, remain open. But it is not clear whether schools in the six rebel-controlled counties of Akobo, Pangak, Pigi, Urol, Nyiror, and Ayud are still open. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Bor.
Still in Jonglei, officials in Bor say at least 900 families have been forced from their homes following a heavy rain that continued from Tuesday evening to Wednesday morning. David Guy, Red Cross director in Jonglei State, says the displaced people need tents for shelter and mosquito nets. This situation happens each year due to flooding in Bor, and residents say officials must help find a long-lasting solution. Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Bor.
Peter God says he was surprised when he stepped in water Tuesday when he woke up in the middle of the night. But God says he quickly realized it had seeped through the mud wells of his heart following that evening's downfall.
When I tried to come out for a cold, then I got my legs in water. I tried to scoop out water. Yes, I scoop out, but it was refilled again.
Agot, a father of two, says he now shares his 3x3 meters hut with 5 other family members after the hut was destroyed during the fighting for control of Bor. Agot says he moved his family to raised ground with basically nothing to sleep on, no blankets, bedding or pillows. He says his family urgently needs this material as well as mosquito nets. But Agot has grown wary of the constant search for emergency supplies during the annual times of flooding in Bor. He wonders why officials can't find a more lasting solution.
The help that I need actually is if there is a way that government can drain out this water, because that the reason might be the dike, because that dike can help taking water out and it can also help preventing water from coming to the area. Because now the water from the rain is the same like the water that comes from the river.
Agot thinks the flooding is occurring because rainwater is not flowing to the Nile River due to the dike constructed with the help of the UN peacekeeping forces in April. But Nyale Majak, the mayor of Bor municipality, says the dike prevents the Nile River's water from overflowing into residential areas. He says there are no resources available at present to construct a modern dike that will better regulate water flow. Jonglei State's Red Cross director, David Guy, says poor suburbs of the capital city, Bor, are severely flooded. Guy says Red Cross volunteers helped to evacuate residents of Hai Machor, Phan Jak, Achengdir, and Ningil areas on Wednesday and are continuing the process today.
In our initial assessment, we find out that there is about 900 families affected at the moment. The urgent assistance now should be the providing emergency shelters, because these people actually they will stay in the rain, and the rains are still continuing coming. So provision we need now is to provide them with emergency shelters such as tarpaulins, blanket, mosquito net, because some of them are also moving with their children.
But Guy says those items are not available in Bor. his team has asked officials at the Red Cross Central Office in Juba for help. He says they were promised that the items will be sent by the weekend.
You know, this flooding are unexpected flooded. This is the rain flooded, so there are no signal, there are no indication. So this become now fall under the hazard and emergency. But you know also with the solution of road from Juba to Bor is one of also the factors. So it depends on how long the trucks will arrive here soon.
For Bor resident Agot, finally receiving mosquito nets and bedding will be a welcome step forward. But he says the longer they wait, the greater the risk for displaced people like himself and his family.
That water around, it is actually stagnant water. And when there is stagnant water, it can be a breeding area for mosquitoes. Unless we have those insecticide nets, that insecticide nets can help because it can kill mosquitoes if it sit on it.
Agot says his family and all of the other affected households are greatly hoping that the end of the rainy season will let them return to a life without disturbance from floods. Normally, there are no rains in Bor from November through April. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A human rights monitoring group says more than 660 people have been killed in the month-long battle for the town of Kobani along Syria's border with Turkey. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, with sources inside Syria, reported today that 374 Islamic State militants have been killed fighting Kurdish forces in Kobani. It said nearly 260 Kurdish fighters, 10 others supporting the Kurds, and 20 civilians have also been killed. The observatory said it believes the overall death toll could be twice the number it gave, citing extreme secrecy about casualties from both the Islamic State and Kurdish forces. And a cousin of slain model Reeva Steenkamp told a South African judge today that Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius, convicted of the killing, needs to pay for what he has done. Witnesses for both sides have taken the stand in a days-long sentencing hearing to make the case for how the 27-year-old double amputee will be punished following a culpable homicide conviction last month. The judge has heard arguments for Pistorius to serve with house arrest, community service, and prison time. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you now with the song Toast to Freedom by Levon Helm.
How delicious is the winning of her kiss? Bind her love to eternal bliss. She's the greatest power in the universe. Freedom.
Her touch will feed your real hope. In the darkest days, on the steepest slope,
let your good heart and kindness fill the temple.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Nobody's free till everybody's free.
We walk the winding road, sail the raging sea.
No prison cell, no censorship hell
can claim our obedience and love.
We have been listening to Levon Helm with the song Toast to Freedom. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
To shackle my chains about liberty.